Thank you very much for your kind words, Kim. And I didn't write that bio, by the way, so yeah. Okay, so I feel very well teed up for this session by some of the other speakers today. So I've attended some wonderful sessions, particularly loved Lindbergh's session this morning on inclusion, and I also went to Ed's session on millennials, and we've just had a fantastic session with Christian. And all of that stuff is very relevant to what I'm going to be talking about, which is the notion of disruption. But before I do that, I just want to give a little bit of context, particularly around the Future of Coaching Collaboration Group, because that's kind of who that's the hat I'm wearing today. That's a bit about me. I didn't know that you were going to give me such a wonderful introduction, but I'll talk about the Future of Coaching Collaboration Group. So this is a multi-stakeholder group. It includes representatives from corporates, so organizational sponsors and buyers of coaching. So we have organizations like PwC, which is where my background is, KPMG, GlaxoSmithKline, National Rail, a whole range of organizations. And leading professional bodies in the UK. So every professional body is represented in the FCC. So we have the EMCC, the ICF, the AC, the APEC, a BPS. So we have a lot of professional body representation, academia and research institutes, as well as Coaching at Work. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Coaching at Work magazine. They had started chairing this forum originally, which then became the think tank that it now is. So it is a think tank, including all these people, and our aim is to advance and professionalise coaching. So what we're about is really around thought leadership for coaching. So we're hoping that bringing all these amazing people together will lead to some amazing things. And we have got some fantastic stuff happening in the space, one of which is, and I was speaking to someone in one of the breaks about this, it's a knowledge portal for coaching, so that coaches don't have to trawl through masses and masses of data in order to get to real sort of well-researched thinking into coaching. You can access it through one portal. So that's one of the things that we're doing in the FCC. So if you follow us on LinkedIn, it's a bit of a plug, sorry. If you follow us on LinkedIn, you can access some of the research that we do. Okay, so a bit about the topic of today. So disruption. What do we mean by disruption? A paper by Ernst & Young in 2016 basically brought up this quote that disruption has worked its way into every sphere of our lives, and it highlights a growing awareness in the business community that disruption is ubiquitous and accelerating. So I was recently, last week, I was away from home for 2.5 weeks working with clients. I was out of the country. And I found myself not looking at BBC News, not looking at New York Times, not looking at Washington Post, because it was disrupting me so much. There's so much going on in the world constantly that if you allowed all that data to come in, it can be potentially very disconcerting. And because of a lot of the work that I was doing was really focusing and being present with clients, back to the theme that Christian was talking about, I actually switched off all the news apps because I found this. I found that there was every 10 minutes something was coming up that was potentially disruptive. So I got a bit curious. What does it actually mean? So this is the Oxford English Dictionary definition. So disruption is a disturbance or problem which interrupts an event, activity, or process. So I think there's a bit of research that says there are 11 million bits of data coming at us every second, and we have the ability to process 40. So imagine what's happening in our brains. Okay, so my colleagues and I in the FCC and I have done a little bit of research into some of the sources of disruption today. And it's not my purpose here to go into a lot of depth on that. I do want to look at what does it mean for us as coaches. What does it mean for our clients and what does it mean for us as coaches? But I do think it's important to just highlight some of these. And we researched hundreds of articles to come up with to sort of do a meta-analysis of all the research that's out there. And these are the three that people broadly agree on. Globalization, huge disruptor, and I'll talk about them in a bit more detail shortly. Technology and demographics. So it's really easy to just look at those words and think, oh, yeah, I know what that means. I know what technology means. You know, the technological advances are something new coming at me every 5 minutes. Demographics, well, yeah, we've just been hearing about millennials. It could be about that. Globalization, well, you know, we've seen some of the impact of the sort of negative trends towards the opposite of globalization with some of the things that are happening in the world. And Lindbergh mentioned Donald Trump earlier. But these are all very nuanced, and it's the nuance of some of these things and the way that some of these trends are colliding that are impacting organizations, impacting our clients, and therefore potentially impacting our profession. Just quick show of hands. Familiar? Yeah? Okay. No surprises there. Just going to... Ah, now. I've just realized that this is the previous presentation and I'm missing a few slides. Not to worry. I'll speak to them. So I just want to say a little bit about globalization and what are the forces that are driving, that are impacting organizations. So PwC every year does a CEO survey, and this year's survey had them asking CEOs to consider a number of opposing political, economic, and trade trends and pick a side in terms of which way the world was moving. And by and large, what they found was that most CEOs on most elements said that the world was moving in the opposite direction to globalization, apart from two areas. And those two areas were cybersecurity, where there's an increasing trend towards globalization, and the other one was corporate integration. So businesses are actually the thing that are driving globalization at the moment, despite the opposite, some of the opposite political trends that the world is experiencing. So business is increasingly integrating across the world, and that has implications for some of these other things, for technology and for demographics. So those of you who were in Ed's session would have heard a lot about millennials. And by 20, in fact, by almost next year, 50% of the workforce will be millennials. Huge implications for organizations. And if you think about the other end of the trend, which is that people are working for longer, we've got this notion of the 100-year life, that people are working a lot longer. For the first time ever, we've actually got four generations in the workplace that have to integrate and work effectively together. So organizations have a huge challenge to try and integrate those four generations that have to work together. And there we have this notion of inclusion, which is why I think that the stuff that Lindbergh was talking about this morning is so critical. Because without, and to some extent it is the answer to everything, because without that, organizations will fail. Technology. So unlike other periods of significant upheaval, like the agricultural revolution, the industrial revolution, the digital revolution doesn't have any boundaries. It's a lot more pervasive. I've noticed today, even though we're all trying to be present, myself included, I keep getting drawn to my phone every few minutes. I'm sort of surreptitiously getting it out of my bag, thinking, has anything happened? So we're so dependent on technology. And it's, and that, if anything, that's the thing that's becoming increasingly ubiquitous. So some of the things that Christian, those of you who are in Christian's session, was talking about, particularly around presence, becomes even more challenging when you put technology into the mix. A few more facts about technology. So 51% of CEOs that were surveyed recently, again, this is the CEO survey I mentioned earlier, are making significant changes in how they use technology to access and to assess and deliver on wider stakeholder expectations. So 51% of CEOs are now focusing a lot more on technology. New technologies are also creating huge volumes of data. Sorry, I'm referring to my notes because they should be on a slide. That's why I keep looking down to make sure I've got my figures right. Data production will be 44 times greater in 2020 than it was in 2009. So in an 11-year period, we've got 44 times more data. So when I just say that, I sort of stop and think and think, well, what does that mean potentially for some of the leaders that we work with as coaches? What does it mean for us when we're in that coaching space and we're having to process more data? What does it mean for them? Because often they're senior people, they're making big decisions every day. They've got this masses of data that they're having to process. What does that do to their judgment, to their well-being, to their teams, and a whole host of other things? And a final bit of data, which I found really interesting, the source for this is Cisco, is that by 2020, there'll be close to seven times the number of connected devices as people on the planet. So seven times more connected devices by 2020. That's kind of a year away. We're almost in 2019. So that's kind of interesting. So it's interesting bit of data around the world. It's interesting bit of data for organisations, and I think it's a really interesting bit of data for us because I don't really think the coaching profession can choose to ignore some of these trends. Okay. So One of the work streams that we've got in the future of coaching is to look at the impact on all of this on the coaching profession. And we've, a bunch of colleagues, about six or seven of us, have got together, and we've got a white paper being published. It's a bit of a busy graph. I'm going to try and sort of talk you through it. But what does all this mean for the future of work? So we thought that there were some organizational changes happening, some workforce changes, career changes, and then the final bit, changing identities. And I sort of feel that we as coaches tend probably to work in that space over there, which is about changing identities, and you'll see some familiar language around holding paradoxes and polarities. But I really think those of you, again, who were in Christian's session, he talked about the wider context, and he talked about coaching, you know, at the mastery end being about processing context. And I think the context isn't just the organisation that the individual is working in. I really think we need to attend to the wider local and global context that organisations are operating in. So from a sort of organisational perspective, organisations are becoming more purpose-driven. And we were having a conversation about, is it purpose-driven or purpose-led? I think we were having that conversation, weren't we? So some organisations are choosing to be led by their purpose. And that's particularly important when you are thinking about integrating generations. So it's a particularly important theme for the millennials. Ed was talking about this in his session. You know, what makes you get out of bed in the morning? And actually, purpose is really important to that generation, perhaps in a way that it wasn't to some previous generations, and I think potentially increasingly important to Gen Z. This idea of being customer-centric, so being led by your client base or your customer base, that's not necessarily that new, but it's coming more and more to the fore. And thinking and working agile. So again, we had a bit of this conversation in Ed's session, what does that mean? So this idea that the ways of working are no longer fixed, they're no longer static, they have to be more dynamic, more agile. So potentially you're talking about working in teams that come together for a short period of time and then disband. So Ed was talking about this in his session. versus being fixed and longer term. And then workforce changes. So I've talked a bit about this already, the notion of having four generations in the workplace, but not just that. So workforce is a lot more mobile now. So there was a study, I think it was actually a PwC study, in fact, that showed that people born between 1980 and 1995, so that's the millennial generation, have a greater expectation of working internationally than their older counterparts. So 93% of people in Africa, 81% in Latin America, and 74% in the Middle East said that at some point they would like to work outside their home country. That's a huge number of people. The other trend was that we've traditionally seen a move of talent from east to west. That's no longer the case. So talent is moving a lot more around the globe, or it's beginning to move a lot more around the globe. So that speaks to having more diverse workforces, back to the inclusion point. But it's also bringing in new behaviours and the requirement for different social skills. So the new behaviours could be around some of the inclusion stuff that Limbert was talking about. It could be some of the things that Ed was talking about in his session around how do you motivate people from different backgrounds, different ages, different belief systems and values. So a huge challenge for organisations to work with that. And what are we seeing around career stages, career changes? Seeing a trend towards flexible and fluid, multi-staged, and requiring different skills. So a colleague I used to work with asked me to meet his daughter in the summer. She's studying psychology. She wanted a bit of advice about what she's going to do with her psychology degree. So, because I've got a psychology background, would I mind having a conversation? Really bright, wonderful young lady. And we were having a chat about, well, you know, what could she do? And she's interested in going into marketing and communications. She's also interested in potentially following an occupational psychology route. And she said to me, well, you know, I might do this first, because I'm thinking I might do that as a second career, you know, maybe in 15 years' time. And I remember feeling quite shocked that at the age of 20... she's already thinking what her second career is going to be. And I'm sure I didn't do that at 20. I was trying to work out, well, what am I going to do? And, you know, where's that going to take me? And so on. She's thinking, oh, I can change it. I'll do this. And if I don't like it, I'll just do that. Because, you know, I'm going to be working till I'm 100. That is what she said to me. I'm going to be working till I'm 100. So the expectation of that Gen Z who haven't yet entered the workplace but are about to, their expectations about working life and careers are very different to perhaps what we're used to and what organisations are used to. So how are they going to adapt and change that? And some organisations are already adapting and creating flexible talent networks where they're saying, OK, if you want to work 100 days a year, that's fine. You can work 100 days a year. Or you want to work 2.5 days a week, that's fine. You can work 2.5 days a week. So some organisations are changing that already. And then finally, this notion of identity. So, you know, I think a lot of us in the professional space anyway, very sort of very vested in some of our professional identities. But that, again, is changing, because if we're going to have two or potentially three careers, what does that mean for the kind of identity that we carry with us when we're in organisations or when we're working with organisations if we're in a consulting space? So a couple of things there, this is all coming from several studies, but a couple of things that are really important. Firstly, for people to get their skills in order, and actually those skills are often a lot about technology. So how do you stay up to date with all of the technological advancements? Because actually, if you don't, what are the consequences of that? So adapting to survive is part of that. Macro thinking, so being able to step back and see the system. And that's no longer the prerogative of people like us who are coaches and OD practitioners. I think leaders are increasingly being asked to step back and see the system and not just lead from a goal-oriented place. Coming back to purpose. And this notion of holding paradoxes and polarities. So, and Christian talked a bit about this in his session around how we as coaches often have to hold those tensions between the different ways we are, and organisations are having to now hold those tensions as well. But they have implications for how we feel about ourselves and how we feel about the places that we work in. Okay. I feel that I've talked at you quite a lot. By the way, I'm happy to take questions as we go along. So I'll just pause and see if there are any questions or thoughts about that, and then I think we need a bit of conversation. So I'll pause for 10 seconds. Okay. So I've got three questions that I'd like you to consider, and I'm going to give you a little bit of time to do this, and I'm just going to do a time check. Okay. And the questions are, and I think what we'll do actually is just do it in the, let's do it in table groups. So how, if at all, are you seeing the impact of disruption on your clients? And by your clients, I mean the people that you work with as coaches and mentors. How do you think the coaching profession needs to change to serve those people better? And how do I need to change? How do you need to change as a coach or a mentor to provide value? So those are three questions. And I am really interested in your responses, because it's all part of the research that we're doing, that I think these are really important questions. So what are we actually seeing as practitioners of coaching? And what do we think needs to happen to our profession so that we safeguard its future? So I'll give you 7 minutes. Is that enough? I'm just conscious we're overrunning, so 7 minutes. Okay, can I have you back? I'm hoping the noise is because you're enjoying the conversation, but it would be lovely to hear from some of you. Can we hear some thoughts on the first question? We were all talking a minute ago.
Just because we do a lot around logical levels and that talks about environment, behaviours, capabilities, beliefs and identity. What we're seeing here is a fundamental shift or challenge of people's identity and beliefs. And for some people, that's really, really difficult. They can't manage it, and therefore either get stressed, go off sick, and or leave the organisation. I said it's good when you can have an understanding organisation and an understanding manager to help you to manage that.
The problem is that some of the people that are supporting that actually are going through this themselves, so it's quite chaotic. It's that VUCA stuff, you know, volatility, yeah. Uncertainty, you know, all of that, really. So it's a massive challenge, and for us as coaches, we've got to be able to put ourselves in that space where we understand that, even though we may be going through it ourselves.
Right, so that's the parallel process, right? So are we experiencing what our clients are experiencing, and therefore how do we manage ourselves in that process? And I'm going to go back to Christian's sessions around presence, and actually, is that a tool for helping us through those really critical conversations with clients? Yeah, thank you. Some more thoughts? No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
So I suppose just to caveat, we broke the questions, really. So We started off with a conversation about the megatrends and kind of the absence of them really in local government parliaments. So on a day-to-day basis, we tend not to talk about globalisation. Our conversation around technology can be quite immature at times, and that demographics are something that we struggle with rather than embrace. So we struggle to recruit millennials. The sector is challenged around bringing the right people in for the future. So I guess what we were recognising is actually there's a huge challenge for coaching and mentoring, as we might not have the opportunity to engage people who can possibly change and reform local governments. So that's kind of what we were saying.
Yeah, we said, are we going to even have millennials to coach? Because are they even going to want to be here? And also, we were looking, with the greatest respect to everybody, we were looking around the room and going, millennial coaching? So it was just, it was more us posing a question and a challenge to ourselves, really.
Yeah, this came up in Ed's session around millennials, actually, and the kinds of organisations that... And I don't want to make sweeping generalisations and loads of categorisations, although that is what we're ending up doing. But to some extent, there is a trend, right, that, you know, Google's the place to work, right? If you're a millennial and you're interested in tech, Google's the place to work. Local government? Question mark. So how are those, you know, how are organisations, because then the model no longer becomes sustainable. So how are you going to ensure sustainability of certain organisational models if you can't change, if you can't think and work agile to attract those people in the first place?
And I think if there's worker agility, thinking about how coaching and how the coaching profession can support human agility, so moving from one organisation to the next organisation, yeah, would be really important. And we talked about technology today, maybe there's solutions there. I think as a profession, rather than being, I'm in this organisation, therefore I coach in this organisation, might want to break some of those barriers down.
Yeah. I'm glad you raised the technology question. I was just sharing over here, because we were having a conversation, that we've got a tech roundtable tomorrow in the FCC, and there are lots of providers of... coach bots, for want of a better word, but there's loads of tech solutions now around coaching. Admittedly, a lot of them are performance coaching, but I'm sort of seeing the trend that in two to three years' time, the whole performance management piece and the whole performance coaching piece can be outsourced to AI. So organisations are not going to have to spend money doing that, and money being time, being resource allocation, you can use your resources in a more effective way. So, again, what happens to the profession there? I mean, I don't know how many people do performance coaching versus development coaching versus executive coaching and all the other names that we can give to coaching. But I think for uninformed organisations, if you bundled it all into one, suddenly you could just say, oh, well, we can just get an app to do this. Why do we need all these people floating around? But then you're missing a whole other sort of the whole other human connection, and the fact that, you know, the app is only going to do so much and AI can only do so much. So all the implications there. Yeah. Thank you. We don't have answers for your question.
No,
but I think it's... But I think it's important to talk about the fact that, you know, there, you know, some, what happens to the sustainability. I mean, I come from a professional services background, and I can tell you it's not that different there. Because,
yeah,
you know, the millennials don't want to join a partnership organisation where you have to work 16 hours a day, and they look at the top and they go, I don't want to be that. No, I'm going to just go and work for somewhere that lets me work 100 days a year. So I think the challenges are everywhere.
An observation. When I've been coaching some of my clients, one of the key things they say, is there a better way? Because what has served me in the past is not serving me now. So I think there's three areas that tend to come up. Is I need to flex my leadership style, because the way I'm leading at the moment is not working. I used to be directive, and I need to actually be more flexible in choosing my leadership style. I think that's one. I think there's a recognition I need to be more culturally diverse, because the people that are working for me, I've got a much more complex culture, and so inclusion is a big part of that, and respecting that. I think the other thing is the basic stuff around time management, because there's so much that they're grappling with, that they're looking at better ways, that includes technology, to actually manage their time and to help them to prioritise and focus on what's important in the business in the future, to enable them to lead others to focus on what matters.
Because well, we're constantly challenged to do more with less, right? So it's that same notion, yeah. Has Limbert gone? Sorry, I just wanted to go back to coming. He asked a question this morning about why is it economically sensible, didn't he? So why is it economically sensible? These are all the reasons why, in that because we've got a increasingly diverse workforce, mobile workforce, scarcity of talent, because if they're not going to get it here, they'll get it somewhere else. So you'll see an exodus of talent potentially. So I'm just something that you said there prodded me to think about that. Sorry.
Yeah, we talked about here, as there becomes more and more disruption, as coaches, we felt that that's the area where we need to give people the space to step away from some of that and get off the merry-go-round. And so I guess that's the area that we're going to need to develop, because everything is just so fast-paced and there's so many sources of information that people get overloaded, and it's about how we develop our skills to help them to step away from some of that stuff to see what's going on for them.
Yeah, agree with that. And I think we had this morning in the very first session, and I didn't catch all of it because I came in late, but the notion of the oxygen mask, right? So how do we stop ourselves getting disrupted to help our clients work through their own disruption? And it's not that we're not going to get disrupted, but how do we manage the disruption coming at us so that we can help them? Because we're not going to get rid of it. So to your point, we need to find ways of helping them. How am I doing? I think we need to wrap up.
A few minutes.
A few minutes. Any more?
Hi. We spoke about on this table four generations in the department, and that's new to me because I was thinking they were some people were talking about four generations in one family, and there was about four age groups. So for me, that's really interesting in terms of looking at how the different initiatives that are being incorporated in order to address that as well. I can't speak much on that.
In terms of addressing the four generations, it is just about that flexibility of thought and, you know, being able to challenge people to think differently and to think about other perspectives. Looking at the traits of those four different generations, me and my colleague were sat next to each other and we could see ourselves in bits of all of them, you know, that didn't just apply to us. And it is just about to help people to look from different perspectives and to ask the questions about what those different generations might need and want, you know, in order to be able to move forward and manage the disruption that they're facing.
Yeah. Thank you. I think that's a good point. And I don't think that until someone says you're going to have four generations in the workplace, I didn't clock it until I read about it. I was like, yeah, of course, baby boomers, Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z, all in the same place at the same time. You can just imagine the huge potential for conflict, tension, etc. there. And I think that, those of us who work with organisations or in organisations and coaches do have a role to play in terms of helping people develop those inclusive behaviours and stop people making assumptions, not stop, but help them be aware of the assumptions and judgments they're making. So if you think of millennials and I once did a straw poll in a room not dissimilar to this, and it's like, well, they're lazy, aren't they? And there are a whole bunch of other things. Well, that's really not going to be very helpful if you have to work with these people and your mindset, you're thinking they're lazy, and then when you go and talk to them, that leaks out. So how do you manage all those perceptions and how do organisations work with that? Okay, I think I probably need to draw that to a close unless there are any other burning questions or comments. There is one, okay.
See, it was just adding on to your point about AI and apps and stuff like that. As a kind of, by no means an expert, but a curious observer, and take a bit of time just to follow tech trends. There's this whole thing about how AI has like seven criteria to them, and really we're only kind of getting there on about two or three of them at the moment. and saying, so for a lot of us, it's going to take a long time for AI to actually start replicating human behaviour. Mm-hmm. We're quite a long way from that. There's a lot of discussion in the tech sector about the last things to be able to be programmable in a self-learning way for a computer to do are probably going to be caring for each other, developing a craft, and also being able to lead. And I think if you think about those three things, those are very human kind of, can't think of the word, but human things.
Characteristics.
Yeah, characteristics. Yeah. Thank you. So for me, that kind of feels like answering maybe the two middle questions. Maybe that's the space to start playing in more, and actually accepting that maybe AI does play a role in those kind of more instant moments of how can I do something differently now. That's kind of exciting, and actually maybe it's those other spaces to kind of play with.
Yeah. I don't think that as a profession we can afford to ignore technology and the advancements in technology. I think it's more about embracing it and finding a way to have a voice with those developers of the tech.
Yeah, and actually just adding on to that as well, one of the things I do find really interesting is having conversations with the tech sector about ethics. And I went to a really interesting conference where people were talking about technology for good. And it was a really, really base conversation about what good was. And it wasn't at all nuanced at all. And it was very kind of medical model based. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, this would be really alarming if we go down this route. You know, like we're kind of revisiting eugenics again.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think, and that's where I also think coaching in those sectors is really important as well, because it's just kind of, it's very infant still as an industry.
I mean, my concern is who are the tech companies that are developing this stuff talking to, because they're not talking to the coaches at the moment, which is why we as the FCC are facilitating that conversation, and we've got the roundtable discussion tomorrow with a whole bunch of tech providers of coaching, because there isn't a lot of conversation between the profession and the tech developers. And so that's concerning, because, you know, what is it that you're actually putting into the system? ? And the tech providers are coming from a very tech background, and we're coming from potentially a very coachy. So how do you bring those two together, I think? And I think the ethics question is a really big one. I think it goes beyond the coaching world when it comes to AI. But I think you're right. I think the other thing I'd add to that point is that I think there's one thing that I can't see how will ever get replicated, and that's this, we were talking about it earlier, this notion of limbic resonance, the idea that you've got two people in a room and they've both got a physical brain, not a mechanical brain, for want of a better word, and that something happens between those two people that just can't be replicated in technology. So there's something there as well that has potential implications for that. Okay, right, I think I'm going to stop there. Thank you very much for your attention and
Thank
conversation.
You. Thank you so much. Thank you.